Want to hear one of my favorite sounds? That's the sound I hear when I get one of the questions right on Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, I guarantee it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. I've been saying I wanted to learn another language for the longest time now, and I'm finally doing it this year with Babbel. I signed up for French because there's a lot of medical history that I'm interested in that was originally written in French. Plus, I've always wanted to travel to France, and when I finally get there, I'd like to be able to get around. Now, Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, and they're rooted in real-life situations delivered with conversation-based teaching, so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. I actually recorded my first lesson in French. Here, take a listen. Matching au revoir to goodbye.
Au revoir.
Au revoir. When will I get the cool accent?
Bonjour.
All right. Got it. Now, that's just my first lesson, so don't judge me or my accent. But I did pick up on a few things that I thought were interesting. There's a lot of spaced repetition and cognitive flexibility being used in their lessons, and I've been pretty impressed so far with the program. The app and regular website are both super easy to use and look great, and the lessons can be done in 10 minutes or less. So far, I feel like I'm learning a lot, and we have a very special deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, babbel.com/barbellpod. That's BABBEL.com/barbellpod. There's rules and restrictions may apply, but 60% off. Check them out, guys.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey, welcome back to the Barbell Medicine Podcast. I'm Dr. Feigenbaum. I'm joined here with Dr. Baraki. This is another Q&A episode. And we like doing these things.
Episodes,
potentially. We have a lot of questions to get through, so we're going to have a slightly different format this time. What I will do is I will play moderator, the first tank top wearing moderator that the internet has ever seen. And I will read the question. I'm going to give Dr. Baraki 1 minute to respond. I have a timer on my screen. Hopefully this shows up on YouTube. And then I'll give myself 1 minute to respond. It doesn't mean we're going to take opposing sides. However, that would make things interesting. But first, Austin, how's it going, man?
It's going all right. Life has gotten much better since I've finished in the CCU, and I'm back to the land of the living, people who are awake during the day and asleep at night, unlike you, I hear.
Yeah, I have 10 days left in the intensive care unit. You know, it's funny, it's actually not funny at all, but somebody asked me, this female asked me, you know, where I worked, what I did, and I told her I was in the MICU, which stands for Medical Intensive Care Unit, which just refers to adults in the ICU, right? Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, you mean the NICU, thinking that I was like an autocorrect. And I'm like, no, that's Neonatal Intensive Care Unit. And I was like, not to be confused with the PICU or the SICU, so the Pediatric Intensive Care Unit or the Surgical Intensive Care Unit. This is just medicine.
Mm-hmm. And for me, I confuse NICU all the time because I've even heard some people in our place refer to the neuro ICU, like for adults with strokes, as NICU. But I'm, you know, used to thinking about it in the context of neonatal as well. So there's way too many acronyms for different types of ICUs out there. So
I think
best to stay out of them.
Best to stay out. Yeah, I think if you can avoid them. There's too many ICUs. That's true.
Yes.
training is going okay.
Training is, it's getting much better. Seems like my tendons are cooperating for the moment, and I'm slowly trying to build some momentum. Signed up for a meet at the end of September that I'm looking forward to attacking. And I think you probably saw that Lorraine trained for about 4 weeks, training twice a week and squatted 315. So I'll just go end it right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, basically this is what happens when you have a person who's got a storied athletic background, good genetic underpinnings, who gets exposed to good training methods. They show us all what rapid progress looks like. And Lorraine weighs what? She's like 95 pounds now?
She's rebounded a little bit since intern year, so she's back around a 63 kilo.
She's in the training weight. Yeah. She's in the sub junior weight classes.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, it was interesting just to see because, you know, in med school we were training much. She was training much more regularly and trained for consistently for about 18 months or so. And at the time, I think her all-time best squat was 303, and it wasn't a particularly slow 303. She had more in the tank, but she just never actually, you know, hit more than that. And so literally probably no more than like 8 training sessions coming off of like nights, just like where she wasn't able to train at all. And then she just tosses up 315. It's just like, what the hell?
Yeah. She takes like months of deloads and then, so there you go. It just means she's due, right? This reminds me of actually, you know, the Cardinals were in a World Series, or it was that, or like a division series. And it was like Game 7, Jim Edmonds was the guy. He was like our outfielder, and he would go on these crazy slumps where he'd be like 0-20 something, and everyone's like, ah, freaking Edmonds again, you know. And so this is like, you know, you want to pinch hit for him, but then you're like, you know, he's pretty good batter sometimes. But he was like for like 0-17 or something like that. And you know, Jimbo, the announcers were saying, you know, the one thing that you can say about Edmonds right now is that he's due. And sure enough, you know,
statistically,
he hits a dinger and we move on. So she was due for some PRs, and I think that it's good for our depression. All right, last two intro questions, kind of unrelated to our podcast. What's been the craziest thing that you've diagnosed in the past 2 weeks?
Oh, geez. So I'm currently on an inpatient HIV service, so that's where I see all the weird, crazy stuff that people get when they don't have an immune system, basically. So I think I can think of a few different examples, I suppose. So, you know, one gentleman who was traveling from overseas came in simultaneously with malaria as well as Yersinia, E. coli, and Giardia all in his gut. So 4 simultaneous different infections. So that was one example.
Sounds bad.
Seen diffuse cerebral toxoplasmosis. I've seen, let's see, multiple cases of pneumocystis, of course. That's like getting to be routine at this point. Cryptococcal meningitis and multiple cases. Just kind of stuff like that that you don't see in any other sort of patient, but it becomes routine on this sort of service. So
somewhere
kind of things that we're seeing.
Golian's taking his shirt off right now.
Yeah.
And for the uninitiated, Golian is a... it's a lecture series that most medical students will listen to right before they take step one, which was many years ago for you and I. But his voice rings in your ears when you're taking the test. And so you hear Cryptococcus and he's broad brace buds. I think the craziest thing that I diagnosed was Chagas.
Yeah.
Well, apparently the place that I was working is the Center for Excellence.
So that actually happens.
Tripanosoma, whatever it is. In any event, glad doesn't have to do with us. And then, what are you reading right now?
Oh, geez. So I'm currently deep in the literature of basically gene expression in the context of resistance training, endurance training, and how they influence gene expression. I have so many like simultaneous projects going on that I actually have not been able to keep up with leisure reading because I have the start and strength coaches conference coming up soon, and I'm preparing the presentation or part of the panel presentation on the topic for that. So free time is being taken up by reading on gene expression and tissue level adaptations to these training methods. Big topics.
Sure. I assume most of these are modifiable with stretching and...
yes. Mobility WAD-induced mTOR expression, I think.
That's right. That PIK3 is maximally repressed with... Okay. So again, just as a reminder, here's the format. I play moderator. I'm going to give both of us a minute on the clock to respond to all of your fantastic questions. I apologize in advance for the snark, but that's just our personalities at baseline. So
there's also personalities plus the fact that many of these questions we probably discussed in some form previously. So we'll do our best to be nice and not do things that make people think we're super smug and assume people's genders and things like that.
Yeah, yeah. Also, don't be a misogynist and okay.
Other various accusations.
Sure. All right. 3, 2, 1. We've got a minute to win it. Here we go. All right. So first question is from Tom Calliere. What is the tastiest piece of beef?
Ooh. So there's a lot to choose from here. I typically tend to go for ribeyes. We actually, when I took that picture today, we actually ended up buying some sirloins, grilling them up. I think a good value steak for people who need something like that is if you can find a Denver cut. That's another actually good, tasty cut of meat.
And John Denver piece.
But yeah, I really enjoy a good ribeye. So
I am more of a, well, and this is no surprise that I have a fancier cut of beef that I prefer. It's the Wagyu.
Excuse me.
Well, you know, and the thing was, I was having, the first time I had it, I was having dinner with Mike Teixeira, right? And so all I see is market price next to the thing. And yeah. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's probably not so bad. And I'm like, they're like, oh, what are you getting? I'm getting the Wagyu. And then the waiter comes over and I was like, oh, I'd like the Wagyu. He goes, oh, great. So it's $33 an ounce, 3 ounce minimum. I'm like, and I already committed myself to the Wagyu. So it's like, what's the, you know, smallest piece of meat that I can get without looking terrible? So I was like, yo, let me get 8 ounces of the Wagyu. I'm on macros, bro. I'm on macros. I'm trying to. So, word to the wise. Don't do that.
Yeah.
All right. Next question. Is not a question. So, we're going to. I like that people ask, it's just statements like plant based diet, how it affects strength training. Like,
yeah, right.
Not a question. Or stretching, foam rolling, etc. Turns out, not a question. All right. Let's see. Why do you guys think strength and conditioning coaches for big professional sports teams, especially football and soccer, are so uninterested or against getting their athletes to do some heavy barbell training?
That's a good question. It's something that has been discussed at length, kind of in the, at least by Rip and Al in the starting strength community. I think it depends on the sport for sure. But there's a whole lot. I mean, coming from a different competitive sport myself, one of the biggest reasons is really going to be tradition. I saw lots of our training methods, our programming, stuff like that. When I swam, the strength and conditioning we did was a lot of it just seemed like the tradition thing that they've done for the longest time. And it was hard for them to wrap their minds around, you know, leaving that tradition that has produced some of the greatest athletes in the sport that they've seen perform previously to try something seemingly new and experimental that seems less specific to their sport, since a lot of them are of the mindset that the training that they do, even outside of the context of their sport, needs to be sport specific. So I think those are probably some of the two of the biggest factors contributing here is kind of tradition and the desire to maintain as much sport specificity as possible, which is another whole nother topic that we've kind of discussed at length elsewhere. At least that's what I saw personally.
Allow me to play devil's advocate.
Assumed that would be the case.
Well, so you consider the people at the top end of sport, particularly like football, for instance, you've already selected for, you know, the baddest of the bad, right? So you can make the argument that some of these folks are maybe strong enough relative to their cohort of other players. And what I mean by that, if you agree that nobody is going to, you know, continue to get stronger in the professional ranks mm-hmm. at the particular position, then you don't necessarily need to select for increased strength. And you've already selected for super explosive folks. And so I think what you have in the strength conditioning folks' minds is that it's just a risk benefit. And in their brains, you know, squatting, benching, deadlifting, pressing, whatever, particularly for high-end strength gains, may in their brains be, you know, have too much risk mm-hmm. compared to benefit. Although, again, if you really analyze this, that's not necessarily the case. So my overall sense is that you are correct. Convention, and then, you know, what is everybody else doing?
Right. And I think Rips mentioned something along those lines before where he said, well, as long as everybody agrees not to do this, then it's fine yeah. to continue along that.
Yeah, in football, we need more James Harrisons, you know. But the average length of, like, the football career is, you know, I thought it was less than 3 years on average, you know, and you could actually make the argument that lack of strength potentially is contributing to, or lack of continued strength development or maintenance even is contributing to this injury epidemic that's taking people out of the league.
Maybe, yeah.
Could be. I haven't seen the study. Yeah. Oh, here's the joke, the ortho joke, you know. never mind. all right. What do you call two orthopedists and an EKG?
Oh, that's a double blind study, man. Everybody knows that joke. Those are the kind of jokes that internal medicine people like to tell.
So. Yeah, exactly. And the ortho's like, yeah, I'm off work though. Where are you guys at? Okay. This is from Mr. Flores. Three top things that an intermediate should consider to do to continue making progress after linear. So just as an aside, this person lumped in linear progression, heavy, light, medium, etc.
Yeah. So those are not things that can be lumped in. I think we need to be more kind of, we need to delineate what period of time we're talking about more specifically, but let's assume that you're saying that the things that you can do to continue making progress after you finish your linear progression. And I mean, in my mind, the biggest things, and they're kind of like things that are probably easier said than done, but in general, regardless of where you are in your training period, where you are in your training advancement, training consistency, staying healthy, things like that are like going to be the most important to long-term progress, right? Avoiding injury and getting back and staying in the gym. Yep. When you're in the gym, especially after you finish the linear progression, you need to get out of your mind that you need to be grinding the shit out of your last heavy work reps routinely as you were at the end of your LP. You need to not be afraid to add more training volume, potentially at a lower intensity. You need to not be afraid to add additional frequency when warranted on particular lifts when they're not moving. There's nothing magic about doing sets of 5 reps. You can potentially vary the number of reps you're doing. We've talked about all these things before at length. We've said that exercise variation is not the tool of the novice to make progress, but this is the land where it can start to come into play. So don't be afraid to manipulate other training variables once you get to past your novice learning progression phase.
Yeah, I think the staying healthy, being consistent, always showing up no matter what, is probably the biggest thing. And then the second thing I would say, or like the next sort of level would probably be in agreement with your thing. Don't grind everything out. It's just not going to be productive for long-term training. And then I would finally say that you need to have some guided practice or deliberate practice where someone's guiding you along the way. Because they're going to cut down that learning curve. Mm-hmm. So I think if you have the means and you have the access to a good coach, you should definitely use that. And if you're not, effectively, you're limiting your progression rate. So
especially if you're older and you don't have that kind of time to boss around.
Exactly. It's not just It's not just about trying hard. Sometimes you need consultation. Okay, let's see. Barbells of Bacon asks, when you guys say the Texas method sucks, does that apply to the templates in the 12 ways to skin the Texas method article that I wrote?
Well, this is your article. Let me let you answer this one.
Yeah, no. Well, because I wrote it in order to give people options for the Texas method style programming that actually comport with, what we know to work for strength progression. And I would further say, people have been saying for years now, or a long time now, that Texas method is a young man's program, and et cetera, et cetera. And I would actually make the argument that even for a young man, it's not optimal. So, for any particular outcome. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. So, Dr. Baraki, how do you work around a tight schedule and still get training in?
I make it work. it's hard to really give a very satisfying answer to that. But I mean, when my work hours get longer, I kind of am more deliberate with the kind of things that I spend my time on. I waste less time in a day, even though I probably don't waste that much time as it is, but I end up getting myself home as soon as I can, into the gym as soon as I can. After that, I'll shorten my rest periods. That might mean that the intensity, the weight on the bar might have to go down. That might mean that I might not hit the weights that I was hoping to hit otherwise, but the idea is that I need to get the training, some form of the training stress in as close as I can to the intended training stress. And so then you need to be flexible. If you need to split up a workout and get some of the work that you had planned in on a different day, that's fine. That people ask us these questions like, what do I do? Do I just ignore the rest of the work? Do I put it off to another day? It's like, if you can fit it in, it's better than not doing it, right? Training is better than not training. So, I mean, there's literally a period during my CCU month where I got home and I did 8 sets of 5 on the squat, supersetted with 8 sets of 5 on the bench, because I have 3 racks in my garage gym. So I could go between the 2 racks and I got 16 working sets done in about 45 minutes.
Yep.
I was basically, as they say in CrossFit land, like redlining the whole time. My heart rate was up. I wasn't feeling awesome, but I got all that work in, more work than people will do in a regular Texas Method volume day workout, but I did it in 45 minutes because I had to get the training in. So
it intuits well that.
Yeah, I was probably good for 800 on that day.
Probably. Yeah, I think, you know, standard stuff. You and I both probably end up planning when we train if we have a crazy call schedule coming mm-hmm. up. You know, particularly for me when I have to travel to gyms, having a gym in your place effectively gives you no excuse to miss training ever. And LA's traffic is terrible, so that's really why I have to end up planning a little bit more. But otherwise, yeah, you just do. And that's the simplest way to say it, is you just do. There is no excuse for missing training. You know, and I don't mean that to say if someone close to you passes away or there's like this terrible medical thing or emergency or whatever, but there's always going to be reasons to skip the gym, and your goal is to only accept the ones, that are very, very severe. Mm-hmm. If you feel tired, if you feel a little sore, if you feel a little sick, and I don't, you know, look, you know, I'm not saying that you have to be like us. And, you know, go kamikaze in the gym because that's just what we love to do. But I'm just saying there's going to be no sort of sympathy that I give for like, oh, you're busy. And again, no judgment. It's just you ask us, how do you find time to train? You just do it.
Yeah. And part of the context for this question is kind of like when people ask us, well, what should I weigh to be the, you know, whatever, and we say, well, how strong do you want to be?
Exactly.
And so it's kind of the same situation, like how good or how strong do you want to be? If you want to be the strongest possible version of you, you have to find every reason to train, and you can't be, you know, finding reasons to skip training. You need to get to the end of your training cycle and be able to look back and say, you know, I did what I planned to do, and I didn't miss, a, you know, 30% of my training sessions or something ridiculous like that.
How many training sessions do you think you missed in the last 3 years?
One, I don't know, like not very many at all.
Yeah, I don't think I missed any.
I think I probably just rescheduled it to just fit the work in elsewhere. So I don't really think I have missed any.
Exactly, same. Interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you for this interesting consult. Sure. Thanks for joining me. We'll be back in the near future. And thanks for your questions, everybody. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, so I'm going to add two things here. Number one, if you had your question answered, you are hereby required to go on iTunes and leave a review.
Ooh, that would be great.
I'll say that.
Yeah,
anyone else is highly encouraged to. You don't necessarily have to, but those who have their questions answered, I'm going to say you're required to. Of course, I have no way of enforcing this, but it'd be very helpful. So please do that.
Yeah,
go ahead.
I think if our reviews don't go up by like at least like 20, then we're
going to know something's up.
Yeah, we have to like boycott doing Instagram lives for a while or something.
Oh yeah, yeah. And then the other thing is that. We recently announced that we're going to be doing a seminar down here in San Antonio in September. So you all should look into that and register. Come on down. We're going to be doing lots of lectures, in-depth material on various medical topics that we commonly get asked about, debunking BS as we tend to do. And you're also going to get live in-person coaching from us on the basic barbell lifts as well. So it should be a good weekend. So sign up and come down to San Antonio and visit.
Yes, there is a link in my bio. It's on the Eventbrite page. And we'll be pimping that thing until it sells out. So
yeah, make it happen, people.
All right. Cool.
All right, guys.
See you.
See you later, man. Bye.